We're here at, I think it's day minus two, as it's officially called, of the Edinburgh Fringe. And we're up at PQA venues, and I'm really glad to see a show up at the Fringe that Fringe Review adored. It must be a few years ago now, but this is Puppet King Richard II. And I'm joined by...
Gregory Gudgeon.
Now, Gregory, the question I want to ask first is, since we first saw that show, how's it developed?
It's had to develop because of the venue. We're in a really tight space, but we wanted to be intimate and invite people in to be the court, in a way. So we've got 24 seats, and we're very tightly packed. And we've had to ask the puppets to gesture a bit less. And
Did they agree?
They haven't all agreed so far, and I'm a little bit worried. Particularly, Puppet King Richard II is very grand at the moment.
Right. And for people that don't know, what's the piece all about?
It's Shakespeare's King Richard II, which is about a disastrous reign in the late 14th century when everything went wrong. The peasants revolt, there was a black death, half the population died. Terrible, but wonderful things happened with our culture. Our language was founded, and Geoffrey Chaucer was the court poet, and all sorts of beautiful things were created. So it's a very tense, interesting reign. And the puppets suggested themselves because they tell this difficult story because they draw the people in. People watch the puppets, so the language, which is a bit dense, goes in somehow magically. People have told us. Other people have said, I didn't understand a word of that, but we're hoping that that it will work again as it did in Brighton. Kids love it, old people love it, and people who don't know the history or Shakespeare seem to enjoy it too, so that's our pleasure.
And as puppeteers, you're doing the words, but it's very gestural, isn't it?
It's very gestural. We've just done a press launch here at PQA on the Lawn Market where we're performing. And in rather muted light, I found that the puppet started doing very delicate gestures, telling the story much more kind of naturally. And I thought, I'd better take some of this on board. It is very about gesture because it transmits the feeling of what's being said, even if the words are a bit arcane. Do you know what I mean?
There's a term, puppet master, but when I've interviewed puppeteers over the years, they talk about becoming the puppet. In this case, you're also doing the words. So is there a kind of a strange relationship between when the puppeteer is silent and in this case you're not?
I suppose, yes, it was a strange relationship anyway. But going back to your previous question about the gestures, the movement of the puppet takes on what you're doing because you're guiding these hands with little sticks and wires and so on. And speaking the lines becomes almost sort of secondary after a while. It's a ballet. But it is a strange thing because you have to have the thoughts of not just this character but the character that's going to speak next and the one after that. And it becomes quite dense inside your head with all, but he says in the play, he says, thus play I in one prison many people, at the end of the play when he's in prison and everything's gone wrong. So I felt that was a license to me to play nearly all the characters. Lucas Augustine plays a lot of the other characters as well and becomes the usurping King Henry IV at the end of the play in a kind of twist. And I think you'd find he might say the same thing, though he has to be the stage manager, so he's got a conscious head on him as well. Of course it's strange, yes.
And in the opening kind of gambit of this interview, we kind of hinted about the things can take on a life of their own, because that's also part of the human condition. So do they? Do they ever? Do you come off sometimes and go, well, they rebelled a bit?
I get, if one of them falls over, as the wooden spoon puppets fall over, I have to start again because I can't bear not to give them their full due. And I do feel that something a bit weird has happened, and I don't like packing them away because they look like they're going to not have enough air to breathe, or you know what I mean? That they do take on a bit of a animated existence. So one has to be a bit delicate with them, really, and like a child, sort of put everything away, or not, actually, maybe leave them out.
How did you and how do you make them?
Well, the really spectacular puppets are made by a puppet maker in the Czech Republic who hand-carved a little block of oak wood to look like me. So I play Richard II and the puppet plays Richard II, and we divide the role in a way to make the madness sort of apparent. She made the big puppets. We found gloves to play the smaller characters. We found wooden spoons to play some conspirators. We've got gloves flying through the air, you know, as the rebels, and it's a whole sort of gallimaufry of different objects and things. That's so we just made them bit by bit and thought, oh look, that's a kitchen ladle. He can play Lord Scroop. And he does.
Do you like Richard?
Yes, I've always liked Richard II. I think he's a really interesting character. I think he's the king that Hamlet might have become. Not necessarily a great king. There are elements of Richard II which, to me, sound like Hamlet talking, though they're written at different times. His story, his abdication, was a notorious bit of history, and Shakespeare nearly got arrested for writing it. And the play was played deliberately before the rebellion of the Earl of Essex, who lost his head. Elizabeth had him executed. And this play's had a very rebellious, notorious reputation, which I like.
What would he make of the world today? This England, this Scotland, this Union, this Europe?
He was... now, I don't want to get too, you know... but I think we're safe here. He was a Europhile. He was very influenced by Italy. He imported the teaspoon, the handkerchief. He made all his boorish nobles eat properly with knife and fork and so on. He was quite meticulous about manners. And this comes over in the play in a slightly effete kind of meticulous way of talking, and a bit of a snob, I have to say, as well. I think he'd find a lot to like about the crisis that we're in, because he was in the crisis all the way through his reign. I think he'd know what to do.
Here in this cacophony of Edinburgh, how do you, before and after, how do you sort of put this on and take it off?
Well, I'm caked in clay at the moment.
So there's a literal
thing there. I have to find a wash basin somewhere that has a lock and keep people out for 10 minutes whilst I take all this stuff off. And then go and see other people's shows and enjoy the thrill of it.
And then when you get inspired, perhaps, how will you put this away and then take up something else?
I've learnt a lot about animation and using objects and things to tell a story that appeals to adults, not just to children. It appeals to the child in the adult and the child in the child. I'd like to continue. I'd like to do maybe another Shakespeare or another story, maybe Parsifal or one of the great legends, using very ordinary objects to tell the story, keep it real in a way, if that's what happens. Or make it even more unreal, I don't know. Is that your question?
Yeah, and I guess it was, you know, at some point when you say goodbye, Richard, and how, what that moment may be like.
I can't. I've got this beautiful puppet now. It's going to live with me forever. It'd have to be buried with me, I think.
Right. Okay. That's loyalty. Thanks for talking to Fringe Review.
Thank you very much.